believe in aliens. I believe that they exist. I believe in aliens. If you don't believe, I'll stop you in the face today. If you don't believe, I'll stop you in the face. I believe in aliens. I believe in aliens.
Welcome, one and all. You know the jingle by now. That means it's time for the Starry Time Podcast with Bran.
And your boy, Dave.
What was that clicking, Dave?
That was me starting the podcast.
Oh, it's like you're a conductor or a director?
No, you're right with the conductor.
What's a conductor do on a train that makes them do that?
They tell the coal shovelers to get going if they need to go faster, like click. More coal in there.
Yeah.
And also they steer the train to keep it on the tracks, because if they miss, then there's no tracks for them. Like if they don't stay on them, you know what I mean.
Most of my train knowledge comes from the Polar Express.
I'm a Thomas the Train kind of guy. Like those are my roots.
Really?
But I get what you're saying. Yeah.
Like, to me, when I think of a train, like, I think of the Polar Express. And I love the scene when they have to go across the ice, but there's no, like, it's completely unrealistic. But, you know, there's no track there, and so they have to, like, go left and right and left and right.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great scene.
All
that to say.
Well, imagine, it's just a little harder on ice because it's slipperier.
Yeah, but I don't think it would just keep going. I think it would, wouldn't it break the ice?
Well, it depends on how thick the ice is.
Hey, you know what we've done a good job of here, Dave?
People have landed planes on ice. But what are you going to say?
Breaking the ice.
Mm.
As we talk about the Starry Time podcast.
Do you think that we needed to break the ice with our listeners on the third ep?
Well, some people it might be the first time.
Are you one of those people that when you like find a new podcast, you start at the beginning? Or do
it
you
depends
just
on how,
jump
it
in right where you are?
It depends. Like Serial, obviously, you start from the beginning.
Right.
But This American Life, I'm not going to go back to the beginning. They're 500 episodes in, 600.
And let's just, I mean, that's funny because those two shows are almost like connected.
Yeah.
So I'm glad you did a very good comparison of like it and then a product of it. But well, I'll say that This American Life is one that it's just a great, it's, who can beat that? It's like the most professional podcast you can have.
It's so good. Like if I had a full-time staff, this show would sound like it, but cool.
Everything from the music to the way, just everything. It's perfect.
Like they do like original scores for like every episode.
That's amazing. How do we sign up to be the guys that do that music? Because that would be the funnest job.
Dude, it would be really fun.
They're just like, what's the topic? And then you just kind of have to, you know, talk, like just do your thing based on that.
So if you stumbled somehow onto this podcast and have not listened to This American Life,
mm-hmm.
First, how did you do it?
Yeah, exactly.
I want to know how you
good
found
skip.
This. But also, thank you. But go and download the This American Life.
Yeah, thank you for being here, but don't waste your time here if you haven't even.
Hey, Dave, one thing that will help, though, and I want to make sure that they know this, one thing that helps people find us is if they go into, hey, what are you doing? Stop that.
What do you mean?
There was a scrapings.
Is that one of the noises that you don't like?
Well, it's one of those like when you're recording a podcast.
I thought we agreed that every time that we ever recorded a podcast, I would be cooking. So that made me like more like attractive, because you're married, but I'm definitely not.
Yeah.
I'm trying to like I need the backgrounds to be things that people will be like, what about that guy?
Yeah.
And then hopefully I'm hoping that my wife listens to this podcast and that's how she gets to know me. And then all I have to do is get to know her, and then we can just go ahead from there.
Yeah, that's true. That's fair. Okay, you keep cooking.
I cook, ladies.
But maybe a little bit softer. One thing.
I switched to a rubber.
Okay,
a rubber device.
Good.
Okay, continue.
One thing that people can do, Dave, that helps out is they can go onto our page, whether it's on the iTunes or whatever podcast app you use, and rate and review us. It helps.
Yeah, we need need ratings.
So by doing that, like it brings us up on the, I don't even know what category we're in. Like I don't there's not like a paranormal category. I think we're like under news and then like
you know what I think one of our sub goals on this podcast should be to get there to be a category for paranormal.
You know
like,
what?
I want there to be that.
You know what I found out today? I was emailing some guests, some future guests, And I scheduled a guest with a guy coming up in November is when I scheduled him for. And I was like,
this is the most planning we've ever done for anything in our lives.
I was like, I've never once had anything going on to where I had to say, nope, let's do it in November. But he did, and it's fine. So it got me thinking, what is this guy doing that makes him, you know, that popular? He's on like a paranormal radio show or podcast like almost every night until November. I didn't even know there were that many.
Well, then why is there not a clear, defined category for that on podcast?
That's what I wanted. That's a great question, Dave.
That's what you were getting at, isn't it?
That's what I was getting at. I was like, because I was like, man, there's more of these than I thought.
Well, that makes me happy, and it also makes me challenged.
Yeah.
We have to rise to the top of a pretty big ocean.
And you know how we rise, Dave?
Ratings.
Ratings.
You think of This American Life would be the monstrosity that it is today if it weren't for a little something called ratings?
Yeah. Preferably five stars.
No whale gets where it is without a little bit of krill. And let's just say that the krill is a rating. We have to eat it.
So you went with the whale reference.
Well, I was talking about ocean earlier with the tides.
So you're gonna keep running.
Brandon, I kind of want to pull you aside for a second, but we are in different states. Uh-huh. But what I would say to you if I was able to pull you aside right now would be, didn't we agree to do themes?
Yeah. No, you're right. I'm sorry.
Aquatic analogies only this episode.
If I were to pull you aside, I would say why the aquatics for the theme.
Well, this I think we'll find out in the interview, which is a perfect transition to.
No, we won't find out in the interview. I've listened to the interview. There's no aquatics.
Well, I mean, it's one of the subliminals. But...
Yeah. For those of you that have made it 6 minutes in and are like, man, I wish this podcast was less dumb, you're in luck. Because today's interview is a doozy. Dave, tell them about who we're interviewing today.
Does anybody want to hear from a doctor?
Oh, I do.
We have him.
Who is it?
The doctor is in.
What's his name?
I'm going to do some trivia.
Okay.
And then, Brian, you try and guess who he is.
Okay.
Okay. He taught Old Testament classes.
Okay.
Typically.
All right.
So we're getting into a little more familiar territory this time. Because, I mean, up until this point, wouldn't you say that we basically have been talking to people that were just have had thoughts and had perspectives that we haven't even like, you know what I mean? We haven't even had a chance to like, to be anything that understands it.
Uh huh.
But then we learn so much as time goes on. But then when we talk to this guy, it's like he is from our perspective, but he's so much smarter.
Yeah.
That it still feels like we're learning everything that we could possibly have, you know, just not known.
Now, that was a great trivia question. I'm going to go with Michael Heiser.
I'm glad we're on the same page.
So am I right?
You're right.
Dr. Mike Heiser.
When you're right, you're right.
Yeah, we interviewed him, and it's such a doozy. We talk about... the connection between God and aliens, if there is a connection, and what that looks like. I loved it. It was such a treat, and it's very interesting. It's like we talked to Preston for 2 weeks in a row, and Preston is 100% convinced in the paranormal and the UFOs, and then we talked to Dr. Michael Heiser, and he is on like the opposite side. He's done so much study and research. Well, I don't want to give it away, but.
I know. I was going to say, I think I'm about to read off a little thing like in about 2 minutes when we transition to the actual interview where I talk about how he has, you know, just done a lot of stuff with Logos.
All that to say, it was a very nice, I guess, a parallel. Not a parallel. It was a very nice... What am I trying to say? There's two coins of every mirror, you know?
There's two sides of every coin, and every side is mirotic.
Yes.
It's very reflective.
So all that to say, we have Preston.
No matter which
wonderful.
Side of the coin you get, you're going to see yourself in it. It's really what
Oh, okay.
Is.
Yeah.
Hey, Brian, I have a confession to make.
Sure.
Earlier, I may need to stop cooking because there it got a little heated, and I was trying to pour boiling water. And while I was it. Asking you that trivia question, I probably sound a little distracted.
Well, I hate to say this, Dave. Not only did you sound a little distracted, I didn't know what you were talking about.
Well, those two things go hand in hand, like two sides of a coin in a mirror fountain.
Speaking of going hand in hand, coming up right now is...
Wait a second. I forgot to do an oceanic analogy there. But anyways, continue.
Last week, we kicked it to the news, and it was this new person. Didn't even introduce himself. It was Nathan. So thanks to Nathan for doing the news. I have no idea who's doing the news this week. It'll be a mystery. We'll find out together.
Let me tell you this also while we're on the topic of Nathan. He's going to be starting a podcast very soon about dreams. And I'm going to try and remember the title of it. It is To Dream and Perchance to Eat. No, Eat and Perchance to Dream.
Wow.
And then in subscript, there's the grub.
Huh.
He's going to be releasing podcasting. So basically what the premise of the podcast will be is that he's going to interview somebody on an expert on dreams and such. Kind of falls into the category of what we do. So there'll be some crossover.
Is he going to interview Preston?
I don't think he has him on the list yet. He has a pretty good list of people though that he's supposed to interview. That being said, the other part of the podcast will be that it will see how like things affect your dreams that you do, like, you know, like eat what you eat and stuff like that.
So I eat what I eat because of my dreams.
No, you dream how you dream because of what you eat. Like,
I like the other way around.
Well, have you that one would be a lot harder to control in a science way.
Right. It makes it to where I feel okay about what I eat.
Well, that's true. So that reason that you would like that better is because it justifies your eating.
Yes. Hey, okay. Dave, let's go ahead.
Yeah, let's get in that interview.
We're going to go. We'll kick it to the news with whoever, and then we'll come back. We love these news, but we're going to kick it to the news, and then we'll be back with Dr. Michael Scholar-Heiser here on the Story Time with 1R podcast.
All righty.
For Story Time News,
this is Steven.
A recent census of people reporting some form of visual or aural hallucination while awake suggests that there are a lot more people seeing or hearing aliens, angels, demons, fairies, ghosts, or zombies than most of us would think. Dr. Beach, who conducted this survey, has found that most people fall into two categories, either the shamanic mystics or the Joe Publics, who have a one-off experience. Also in the news, an Italian study found that 10 minutes of eye contact leads to hallucinations and monster sightings. They say that these sightings come from the unconscious mind and are projected onto the face holding the gaze. Better be careful who you're looking at. And finally on the news, after having witnessed a UFO being intercepted by military jets, a man says that two men in black approached him, addressed him by his name, and ordered him to keep quiet about what he's seen. He has kept his identity silent. However, he has a new documentary called Australian Skies, in which he claims that even black helicopters begin to hover his house and follow him to make sure he keeps quiet. For Starry Night News, this is Stephen.
All right, we're going to get right into our interview. Today, we're really excited. Before we get to today's interview, if you have any guests that you want, you think, you know what, that'd be a guest I want to hear, email us, storytimepodcast@gmail.com. We want all of your requests as far as interviews go, and we will try to make them happy. So storytimepodcast@gmail.com. Hey, Dave, tell us about our guest today.
Well, he's great. That's what I'm going to say first off. Dr. Mike Heiser is a scholar in the fields of biblical studies in the ancient Near East. He is in scholar in residence at Logos Bible Software. Mike earned a PhD in Hebrew Bible and Semitic languages at University of Wisconsin-Madison in 2004, which, by the way, one of my best friends goes to school there. Just thought I'd throw that out there. Mike has also taught biblical studies, theology, ancient languages for nearly 20 years. The focus of his research is Israelite religion and biblical theology, particularly the divine counsel and the supernatural worldview of the biblical writers. He's the author of several books, but is best known for The Unseen Realm, Recovering the Supernatural Worldview of the Bible. Mike has had a lifelong interest in the paranormal, especially the UFO phenomenon. In 2005, Mike was named one of the 100 most influential people in UFOlogy by Fate magazine.
Nice.
He is most well known in this field for his novels, The Facade, and its sequel, The Portent, and his critiques of the ancient astronaut theory.
Mike.
So that's a mouthful. Did I get anything wrong? You can correct me anywhere.
No, that you got it right. I hope your listeners are still awake. Mike, you got it right.
I want to know what's it like to be known as a scholar? Like, that's how we describe you, as a scholar.
Boy, you know, that's actually an interesting question, because it's really a two-edged sword. On the one hand, you know, yeah, it's nice to be recognized for actually learning something in graduate school, because you do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and having a certain expertise in things. But, you know, in my experience, unfortunately, I think it's really off-putting to a lot of people, especially, you know, my church experience. You know, when we moved here, I live in Bellingham, Washington now, the first thing I told my wife when we were church hunting was, now when we go here, you it's okay to tell people my name. So, but you don't tell them where I work, where I did work, you know, where I went to grad school, what I do online. I mean, I had this whole grocery list. It, you know, it lasted about 2 weeks, you know.
Yeah.
Because people just sort of, they don't think you're approachable, you know. So it's actually a double-edged sword. But, you know, I wouldn't trade it. I'm very grateful that, you know, God led me to do that.
Yeah.
And wouldn't trade it for the world, but that's the reality of it.
Mike, what can you tell us real quick what church you go to up there?
Yeah, I go to Grace Church in Bellingham, which is a pretty traditional non-denominational church.
Okay, cool. We're excited today because we get to talk to you. Me and Dave we're both Christians, and we're interested right now in this topic. Not because we actually believe in aliens or UFOs, because we're not there yet. We wouldn't say that we believe. But we think it's such an interesting topic because so many people do believe. Just like so many people believe in God, a lot of people believe in aliens. They believe in UFOs kind of as their higher being and their higher power. So why is that? And is it possible for those two things to exist together? So we're excited about that. But kind of how did you get started as somebody whose background is in biblical studies and stuff like that? How do you go into the realm of studying UFOs?
Yeah, well, I always had sort of a casual interest in it because, you know, on one level, probably the simplest level is there's a mystery there. You know, and anybody who's sort of curious, and most people, you know, do have a certain level of curiosity in mysterious things. It's easy to get drawn in by it. You know, I remember as a kid, you know, seeing shows like In Search Of with Leonard Nimoy and all that kind of thing. And yeah, there's for a lot of reasons I kind of missed that show too. But you know, you get drawn in that way, and I always had a casual interest in all things, you know, sort of strange and old and weird and whatnot. But it wasn't until actually I was in graduate school that I sort of got pulled in to, you know, being sort of part of that world. And there were really two trajectories. One was I happened to be listening to what would have been the 50th anniversary of the Roswell event. I was listening to a presentation audio. And I knew enough about, you know, the Roswell event to sort of know, you know, the lay of the land and what was said, not said. And the Air Force had this was now their third different view of this, which in and of itself was kind of weird. So I'm listening to a press conference conducted by a guy named Colonel Haynes or the U.S. Air Force. And then some reporter asks him, well, Colonel Haynes, you know, you know, this is the Air Force's third explanation for this. And, you know, we understand how things can change and, you keep working on a problem and whatnot. And he says, but isn't it true that in the Air Force report, the so-called bodies, you know, the quote-unquote alien bodies at Roswell, you're explaining those by crash test dummies that were used by the Air Force in high-altitude experiments. And isn't it true, by the Air Force's own report, that those dummies weren't used until the 1950s, whereas the Roswell event was 1947? Here we are at the 50th anniversary. And so what I thought I'd hear Colonel Haynes say was, oh, yeah, you know, you're right. I misspoke. You know, thank you for that. And then mm-hmm. move on. But instead he goes, no, that's correct.
Wow.
And and the reporter says, well, how does that work? Yeah. You know, and the guy actually said, I went and got the transcript, the CNN transcript after the show. He said, we believe that all the witnesses to the Roswell event underwent time compression.
Mm. And I'm like, what's that?
What's that? Yeah. You know, and of course the reporter's like, what's that? And he said, well, what we mean is that we think that the witnesses are recalling an event that they thought was in 1947, but was actually in the 1950s. Hmm. And when I heard that, I thought, you know, that is so dumb and so demonstrably indefensible.
Yeah.
That somebody somewhere must want this myth to live.
Yeah.
There has to be some reason. I mean, I bet Colonel Haynes was pulled aside by some general at some point and said, son, you're going to go to Roswell and talk about this. And you're going to serve your country. You're going to sound like an idiot, but you're going to serve your country. You know, and it just drew me in because it was so stupid.
Yeah.
So I thought there's something more to this because it's being used to sort of mold belief, you know, at that point. So that drew me in. Then when I got to my dissertation in grad school, I was kind of burned out in grad school. And I thought, you know, I'm going to spend the first year of what should be my dissertation. Of course, I'm not going to tell my advisor on writing a novel, just because it's something I always wanted to do. I had never tried it before. And I wanted to combine the things I had a real good grasp of in terms of biblical studies and ancient texts and ancient languages, and then this sort of stuff, and just sort of throw it all in the blender and see what came out, you know. And the result of that was the facade. And then when that when people got wind of that, I have this whole really wacky story of how I wound up on the Art Bell show,
yeah,
which was just crazy in and of itself, because I had a friend over who had read the draft of the novel. It wasn't even a book yet. And that was in the days when self-publishing was being born. So we thought, hey, this was a fun exercise. We'll do this. And then I'll go back to my dissertation and, you know, cross that off the bucket list, you know, kind of thing. And my friend said, well, I'll play publicist. You know, I'll send Art Bell an email, you know, because we were listeners to the show. And we both kind of laughed because we thought that there's like this whole phalanx of people surrounding Art. You know, it would take months to penetrate, you know, and get to him. And so he sends the email off on a Sunday. Well, Monday I come back from school. My wife meets me at the door and says, you're not going to believe who I just got off the phone with. And I said, who?
That's awesome.
Art Bell.
That's so funny.
He wants you to call him back. You know, and I'm like, what? You know,
that's my craziest dream thing. That's my dream Art Bell to call us and say, hey, call us back.
That's the dream. That's the great dream for us. This podcast, that would be the ultimate thing.
Well, you get here, I'm scrambled. I mean, I can't say, no, I don't want to go on the show. I'm not ready, because it's Art Bell, you know?
Right, yeah. Right.
So he wants to know, you know, who am I? What's your thing? You know, what do you want to talk about? And it was interesting. You know, he was very specific about not believing certain things. Hmm. But he told me I would never say that on the air, because my thing is I let people, you know, say what they're going to say. I might poke them a little bit, but that's the show, you know. And of course I knew that. But I wound up going on that show. And then after that, it was like, you know, I would get invitations and hate mail and, you know, all this kind of stuff. So it was just – I just became sort of part of the fabric. And I viewed it as, well, this is a good thing because, you know, this is an alternate theism. This is an alternate – you know, it's a substitute for Christianity or really anything, you know, traditional, you know, religion. These people are serious and both in a good and bad sense, because on the one hand, they might hate Christianity and this becomes their, you know, response to it. But on the other hand, I mean, I've gone to a few UFO conferences as a speaker, and they're great to do any sort of, you know, I don't want to, you could call it evangelism in some sense, but any sort of ministry where you have better spiritual conversations at a UFO conference than you often do in churches.
Wow.
Because so many of those people are there and they are primed
yeah.
for big picture questions. I mean, they are just primed. Mm-hmm. They can't wait to talk about who are we? Is there a God? What would that God look like? You know, what about extraterrestrials? Is that how we should think? You know, so they're just ready. And it was it's just kind of fascinating, you know, what actually happens at these things. And it really gives you an opportunity to engage with people. And, you know, my thing is I try to affirm them, you know, where I can, because I do believe in the supernatural, and I believe the world is a lot stranger than a lot of people sort of want to admit. And you can say, look, I'm not denying you had XYZ experience or your brother had this or that experience, but, you know, rather than use that experience to sort of junk, you know, what you believe to this point, maybe you should use that to sort of, you know, help you process this thing, you know, we call Christianity. Maybe it can help you process it a little better,
right?
You know, and it would open you up to some questions. They don't have to be incompatible things.
Mm-hmm.
And you shouldn't conclude that, oh, because I can't explain that thing I saw in the sky, it must be alien. That's logically incoherent. Mm. So just to get people to think about it a little bit and you know, have a conversation.
Sure.
So where do you stand on the existence of aliens? I know that you've, as far as being able to make them both coexist in a worldview, where do you put them in yours?
Yeah, I don't have a theological problem or a biblical problem if there are intelligent extraterrestrial
mm-hmm.
beings. I personally don't think that there are, and for me it's a science question. So what I need is, I don't need math equations, because, you know, I think that's an absurd approach. You know, the so-called Drake equation, where, hey, I can stand up in a room and make up an equation too, where all the components of the equation are speculations, because that's exactly what the Drake equation is.
Hmm.
You know, it just, I mean, if I say it, nobody cares. But, you know, I mean, Michael Crichton, for example, was one that just was very public that says this is absurd, mm-hmm. because every component of this is literally just made up. So how does this help us? You know, you can talk about all the statistics, you know, argue that it just doesn't mean anything. What you need is some sort of, you know, biological confirmation would be nice. The ultimate confirmation is if, you know, one would land here and take you to another place and then back. I mean, that's indisputable. Biology can, in our day and age, can be faked, to be real honest with you.
Yeah.
Now that we're in synthetic biology, that sort of doesn't cut it anymore. But
sure.
I just need some sort of legitimate scientific confirmation that either there are extraterrestrials, you know, intelligent beings, or there were. And then that becomes a thing that's on the table for other discussions. But we haven't had that yet. So I don't have any basis, you know, to conclude that there are extraterrestrials. So I can't say I believe them.
Yeah. So in our first couple episodes, actually, we talked to Preston Dennett, and he was going through, like, all these investigations that he's done, talking to people. They've seen him. They've been abducted. They've had implants, all this stuff. And he is 100% sold that there is enough evidence for anybody to come to the conclusion that aliens do exist. So, like, for us, me and Dave, like, we've always just been like, oh, those people are crazy. But the more that we look at it, surely there can't be that many crazy people. Like, they can't all make up stories.
So, they aren't.
Yeah. So, you know? so how do you come to the conclusion that there aren't? Like, what's the answer to that?
Well, you can't logically use an unknown to prove the validity of another unknown.
Sure.
In other words, that the fact that someone has had XYZ experience and even has an implant does not mean that the experience and the implant are what they think it is. In other words, extraterrestrial. If you guys can get her, and I don't know how open she is to doing interviews. I've never met her.
Mm-hmm.
I've sort of, you know, I have friends who do know her that have conversed with her sort of for me. But Leah Haley would be a real good person to target on this. Leah professes to be a Christian. And at one time, she was a significant, you know, real high profile alien abduction researcher. And now she just basically says it's a myth. It's a deception.
Wow.
She chalks it up to basically what would be called in popular parlance my labs, military abductions. And she has sort of recast her whole experience and her research and done a 180 on this. Now, if you really read deeply into the abduction material, there is what many researchers would say is not a coincidental connection between figures in alien abduction research and figures who were also part of things like MKUltra, what is loosely termed mind control experiments, experiments on human memory, that sort of thing. So Leah Haley is one that would say that it's very possible. And again, she's really gone 180 degrees away. She thinks in her case, this is what happened, that she was abducted and given a screen memory of an event that never, I mean, she was abducted, but she wasn't abducted by aliens. So this was something that she was given to remember. And again, there are, you can look up patents for this kind of thing. You can find it in peer-reviewed psychological research. I mean, this is not a fantasy that people have this capability, that these sorts of things exist. But, you know, given that fact, it doesn't really, if someone has an implant, well, okay, you have an implant, but I could have put that there if I put you under, you know, it just doesn't add up to this one possible conclusion. Mm-hmm. So for me to consider an alien explanation for somebody's implant or for an abduction experience memory, I'd have to first know that there are indeed aliens.
Yeah.
And if I knew that, then that's on the table and that becomes a competing hypothesis, you know, with these other things. So I don't have to invalidate somebody's experience or the truthfulness of what they're saying. Trust me, if you go to UFO conferences, you will know who the disturbed people are. I mean, you'll run into a couple. I've run into a handful. Most of them are very normal, you know, just like you and me. They have very normal jobs and live out their lives, and you know, they're school teachers and construction workers, whatever, you know, lawyers, doctors, but they're there for a variety of reasons. But there are a couple people that you run into that you go, man, this guy probably needs to be institutionalized. But that is really unusual.
Okay.
Most of the time it's very normal, you know, interaction with people.
And you know, I think that what's kind of crazy is I think now we're in a day and age, you know, where it's so easy to doctor film and stuff. So that becomes kind of useless. Mm-hmm. But what scares me about what you're saying is that now you can even doctor people, because we have there's enough out there that you could genuinely make someone believe without a shadow of a doubt that they'd had that experience. Yeah. And in a way, that means that there's some other person besides them that's hoaxing people in a way. You know what I mean? Like that they're behind the fact that there's this fake story out there, but the person that's a victim actually totally believes it. Like they're just as much a victim as the people they're telling.
You know, the alien abduction stuff, just like quote unquote UFOs, there are a number of buckets that these things can go into. The way I parse the abduction experiences, you know, I think a significant number, you know, are sleep paralysis, and I don't view sleep paralysis as anything sinister. It's a known phenomenon. So, you know, some people will report, you know, not being able to move. They don't actually see anything, but, you know, so some of them are in that bucket. Some of them, I think, you know, are I think you have accounts of demonization, you know, for lack of a better term. You know, again, since I, you know, adhere to the supernatural worldview, to me, that's on the table.
Yeah.
I think a small percentage you could file under demonization. I think another percentage you could file under, you know, this whole experimental abduction kind of thing, you know, for whatever reason. Again, there's half a dozen buckets that you could put these things in, but I don't have an alien bucket yet, because I don't know that there are aliens.
So
I can't use an unknown to explain another unknown.
Right.
So what do you say, like going to that demonization thing, so would you say that there's a chance that a lot of these alien abductions, quote unquote, are actually supernatural beings trying to pull people away from God or shield their eyes to the actual God that they should believe in? Do you think that's a possibility?
Yeah, I think it is. I tend to wonder if it's that intelligent. I mean, I think this is a minority of instances. Again, most of these things I would classify as sleep disorders or sort of remembering an experience and then processing it incorrectly, whether it's intentional or, you know, there's something going on in your brain that you know, is the result. You know, I don't know that it's that intentional. I do think demonization occurs. I can't claim to know why a demon would do what it would do on any given, you know, situation. I'm not a believer in that the demons are out there huddling together thinking, you know, how can we, like, convince people that the Nephilim thing is happening all over again because this is part of our great conspiracy. I don't think that's coherent. I just think that people can be demonized. And in today's environment, especially with the exposure to these alien narratives that we have, the result can be that this is the way they process that event. Mm. You know, so I would never claim that it's that intelligent, but it's one of the buckets, you know, on the table, so to speak.
Yeah.
I love what you said about buckets, because I think that the biggest thing that happens for people on the outside is they generalize everything. And that's what was happening for probably me and Brandon. And what's great about being able to get down to it and actually talk to the people is finding out that what we've generalized to be one thing, which is alien abductions or aliens in general, is so many different things that are that have their individual characteristics. Mm. And so then you don't have to discredit everybody for the same reason, because they all might have a totally separate reason that they believe what they believe in. There's different levels to it.
The bigger category of UFOs is sort of a classic example, because, you know, when you see or say or hear UFO, the people's minds automatically go to alien or extraterrestrial.
Right.
If you actually go... If you go to a UFO conference, again, people are going to be there for a varied number of reasons. You're going to have, you know, people there who, you know, had an experience or didn't, or they have some scientific curiosity in it. So the whole, you know, UFO, just that terminology, tends to really need parsing. And what you just said about people tend to generalize it, it's so true, because if we talk about UFOs, do people see UFOs? Well, of course, they see unidentified flying objects. They see unidentified things in the sky, objects that they can't readily identify. National UFO Reporting Center, last year there were over 14,000 cases. Wow. So, well, what are those? Okay, well, could it be a meteorological phenomenon that they're not familiar with? Sure. Could it be a celestial phenomenon at night? Sure. Could it be an experimental aircraft or some aircraft that they just aren't familiar with? Well, sure. I mean, you have a whole host of buckets. So when someone asks me, do you believe in UFOs? Well, like, what do you mean?
Right.
Do I believe that people see things they don't recognize in the sky? Well, sure, that happens every day. Mm-hmm. Do I believe that there are extraterrestrials in tangible craft flying around our skies? Well, no, because I don't know that there are aliens in the first place. So there's just a great variety here. I mean, you will get people in the literature that I'm interested in this question because if it's real, I want to know how the technology works. You know, your nuts and bolts kind of scientists. Mm-hmm. Then you have your military people, and they'll show up at conferences. They're usually in plain clothes, and I've occasionally had people identify themselves, you know, to me, and you know, that kind of thing. And they're there essentially to watch what goes on. You know, and they might be assigned there. They might be retired. They might just be curious. You know, who knows what's going on. But so there's an intelligence angle there. Or you meet somebody that, hey, if it's real, we should be militarizing this. You know, we should be in possession of this technology for military purposes. And it just runs the gamut. Some are purely religious. You know, that I need this to be real because, you know, of something I've rejected or... You know, something that I just think is really in line with spirituality, and I feel a real urgency to be a spiritual person, and I am a spiritual person, and this is a more to them acceptable way, or perhaps a more comfortable way of defining spirituality as opposed to the church, which people tend to view as this authoritarian, heavy-handed, the nun who slaps your wrist, you know, with a ruler. Kind of thing. And you know, our culture, the postmodern culture, is very resistant to authority figures, and this is more acceptable. I mean, there's just so much variety to it that, yeah, to generalize this is really a mistake. And because there's lots of evidence for, again, sightings, even physical evidence for it, like on the ground, and that. Again, we don't necessarily know what it is, but the fact that you don't know what it is, the fact that an Air Force colonel doesn't know what it is,
right,
doesn't mean it's extraterrestrial. You know, it's the bar just has to be a little higher than somebody wearing a suit saying, "Well, I don't know about that project." Well, okay, you don't know. We know about military compartmentalization. We know about security oaths. We know all about this stuff. So I'm going to try to give you the benefit of the doubt, but your answer doesn't compel me to believe that the real ultimate answer here is extraterrestrial life. Yeah. I just have to have more than that.
Yeah.
I don't think it's unreasonable. I don't think I have an unreasonable position.
Yeah.
I don't have a theological problem with the idea. And frankly, it would be cool if they're not hostile. Okay.
Right.
I mean, it would be great to experience that kind of knowledge or get that kind of confirmation in my lifetime. There's just a cool factor to it. There's a wonder factor to it. But the fact that I'm open to it doesn't compel me to embrace it with the absence of evidence.
Yeah. Let me ask you this. Have in the conferences that you've been to and probably the emails that you've gotten from people that have read your work and stuff like that, have you come across people that are like us that are Christians, but would also say that they believe in aliens, and how do they back that up? How do they justify the two existing?
Yeah, that it's actually fairly common.
Really?
And the most common subset of that is to just take the whole topic of aliens and make it demonic.
Okay.
Of course I believe in aliens because aliens are demons.
Yeah.
And I don't reject the idea of demons. Therefore, I believe in aliens because they're demons. You know, so it's that sort of thinking, very common. There are others who, you know, will treat the two as separate categories that might or might not overlap.
Hmm.
Again, and that would be me if I knew there were alien life, that I would be separating.
But if they're two separate things, where would Jesus come into that? Where would salvation play? Like, does the cross cover the sins of man and also ETs, or how does that work in the two different, if you differentiate?
Yeah. If you're going with biblical theology, the atonement is about human life and about this terrestrial ball, you know, that we call Earth.
Right.
That's the focus of biblical theology. I mean, the biblical writers weren't even aware of places like China and Australia. I mean, I'm not going to say they were aware of, you know, Alpha Centauri or something.
Sure.
You know, it's not coherent, you know, to state it, to make it be more than what it is. Now, there are two places in the book of Hebrews where the writer of Hebrews, you know, talks about the worlds, or some translations have the universe, being framed by the word of God, in Hebrews 1, Hebrews 11.
Mm-hmm.
And it's true that in Greek, ion there, the lemma, is in the plural. So you could translate it worlds.
Mm.
That's very true. And so there would be some, again, if we found out tomorrow there was extraterrestrial life, well, you know, okay, but maybe that's what the writer of Hebrews was implying there. Maybe that he somehow knew that. Who knows?
Yeah.
It's also true, though, that grammatically that a plural word form, a plural noun, can be used for emphasis and not true plurality either. So it doesn't really get you anything, but it's still there.
Yeah.
But, you know, back to the question, I mean, the biblical theology is oriented toward humanity and toward this part of God's creation, you know, the planet Earth. Now, in Colossians 1, you know, the language Paul uses there really expands to all things visible and invisible, mm-hmm. all things that are created. So in that sense, if they suffer the effect of the fall or the loss of the original Edenic goal, and I'd be hard-pressed to tell you how that works, but given the language of Colossians 1, the atonement in that sense is comprehensive.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't mean that grasshoppers, you know, need atonement for their sin, you know,
right.
You know, or cows or cats, or, you know, it's a different kind of you know, a different kind of application of the atonement language. So in that sense, it could be comprehensive, but in terms of a salvific sense that we need sure. forgiveness from sin, the focus there is humanity. Mm-hmm. And I think that's pretty clear in biblical theology. So an intelligent extraterrestrial may sort of, you know, find itself in the other category as opposed to the human yeah. category. What kills me about this, and the reason that this comes up is, especially in Catholic thinking about the ET question, mm-hmm. Is the reason it comes up is that people are prone to define the image of God as intelligence, mm. which is a real theological mistake. Aside from this question, you know, I used to get people in class, you know, we talk about the image of God, and I'd get, well, the image is intelligence, or it's the ability to pray, or, you know, it's language capability, or, you know, who knows what else, but it's some quality.
Right.
Then I would always ask, well, are you pro-life? Oh, sure. You know, well, like completely pro-life, life begins at, you know, the moment of fertilization, and that's a human person. Oh, yeah. Well, then you just really undermined yourself, because the conceptist can't pray. Sure. The conceptist doesn't have any of these capabilities you've just described. Well, it's they're all there potentially. Well, that's nice. Now we have a potential person.
Right.
Now we have a life that's potentially sacred. Thanks a lot.
Yeah.
You know, that just doesn't do anything for us ethically.
Yeah.
But since we're prone to think that way when the subject of an intelligent extraterrestrial life form comes along, then it's like, oh, well, we gotta get them redeemed somehow. We gotta go baptize them, or we gotta go preach the God. Jesus has to go die on their planet. I view personally, and I know that this is widely in the literature, so I don't want to sound too offensive here, but I really think that those discussions are kind of nonsense. Mm. But that's just me, you know.
Yeah, I kind of had a follow up, but you kind of just called my follow-up nonsense, but I was talking to some friends a couple weeks ago, and I was like, I think in order for aliens to exist, they would have to be like the same gospel but different Bible written towards their world, to where the gospel still makes sense, but it makes sense for them and their peoples, you know.
Yeah, that's very common. I just don't think it makes a whole lot of sense in terms of the revelation we have, you know, in biblical theology. Now, yeah. you know, if God wants to look at that way and just doesn't bother to tell us in the revelation we have, well, I'm not going to get to heaven and find that out and say, well, God, we have to have a conversation. I need to correct you here. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. that isn't going to happen.
Yeah. And that's why you're a scholar and I'm not, let's be honest.
You're just a teacher, Brian.
Yeah.
Elementary.
Middle school. But,
well, one thing we haven't even mentioned, though, I mean, you've said that some people account for aliens as demons, but there's also the flip side of that, which is angels, and angels represent a category of people that, you know, or not people, but of creatures that are intelligent. I mean, I don't know where they fall on the scale of humans and God, where their intelligence level is, but they don't have the same need for Jesus like humans do. Like, they're already in heaven and stuff like that. So there's a potential for a creature that is just outside of that whole thing. It's just part of his creation. I don't know if that's
yeah.
That's...
In terms of a category comparison, you know, that's worth, you know, considering as an analogy. I mean, I think some animals, you know, would also be worthwhile considering the analogy, because animal intelligence is something I'm interested in. We tend to think animals aren't as intelligent as us because we can't communicate with them.
Yeah. Right.
But if you look at what some animals pull off, they're pretty intelligent.
go to SeaWorld and you'll be impressed.
Well, I mean, look at a beehive. Yeah. Good grief. You know, you know, honestly, I couldn't do that. Really. I really could not do that. That would take me the rest of my life to duplicate what they do in a few weeks. You know, so, you know, there's a category issue there, but that's not a bad thing to use, again, to try to analogize. I get the question all the time, well, aren't aliens angels then? You know, if they're good guys, are they angels? Well, you know, it depends how you define alien. If you define alien as a being that is subject to physical laws, that needs a craft to get from point A to point B, that needs technology, to do that, that has to eat, you know, that probably needs hydration or oxygen. You know, it poops, you know, it has to reproduce. Well, I don't really see that as a description that's coherent when it comes to angels. But the intelligence point, you know, still is a link. You know, it's a correlative thing that might be useful for analogy.
Yeah.
Right. You would, like, in the sense that angels aren't necessarily a part of this world the same way that we would be saying the aliens are. They're not tied to the need for different things that this universe would provide, and that, like, you know, like for feeding themselves and, like you said, just all that type of stuff.
I mean, I think the plurals in Genesis 1:26, the reason we have plurals there is not, you know, and I'm referring to let us create humankind in our image. I don't think that speaks of the Trinity. That can get you in trouble in other passages if you presume divine plurality language is always the Trinity. Mm. But regardless of that, I think that what we have there is God speaking to the members of his heavenly host. And the reason that it's plural is because they and us share a certain status. I view the image of God as a status, and that is to represent God. So we represent God in this domain authority called Earth. You know, Adam and Eve were the imagers, the original imagers, and they were going to pass that on to fulfill the Edenic mandate to make the rest of the world like Eden, you know, the good rule of God and all those big theological concepts. To do that, God shares his attributes with us, the communicable attributes, one of which is intelligence. Well, he does the same thing with divine beings, you know, angels. It's just that they work for him in a different sphere of authority, whatever that is. Mm-hmm. It's the world of the disembodied, and however you want to, you know, conceptualize it. So I think there's a connection there, but they're still not human, and their domain authority is not Earth, even though they interact with us, you know, in biblical theology.
Yeah. Go ahead, Dave.
I was just going to say that I've never even – that's the first time I've heard that perspective of let us create him in our image, referring to the angels when he says that, and like all the different people in heaven at the time, or the host of heaven when he says that. That's an interesting –
Yeah, the us, you know, that's how I take the plural language. Or not when it comes to the actual creation, I mean, you'll notice the language switches back to singular. There is only a singular creator in every creation text in the Bible. You know, so God created them, male and female, in his image, he created them. You know, it switches back to a singular creator. There's no ambiguity. You know, there's one creator and only one creator. You know, the ancient alien people, you know, they love to go to Genesis 1:26 and quote the plurals, and then they just leave out the singulars, you know. And, you know, of course, they don't care about evidence anyway, but you know, just, for those of us who do, that's an irritation.
Yeah, that's good. Let me ask you this. I think there's a lot of people out there that, like you said earlier, that choose to believe in aliens due to a desire for spirituality. So why do you think it is that those people are prone to believe in that for spirituality rather than, let's just use Christianity for an example. Mm-hmm. Like, why do you think they choose that rather than looking at, you know, Jesus who historically lived, the Bible, which is historically accurate, those type of things that are there as proof rather than believing the thing that they see in the sky that may or may not exist?
Yeah, I think you have both negative and positive motivations here. I mean, negatively, again, there's a resistance to Christianity because of how someone would feel about the church or a Christian they know who might have been abusive or hypocritical. You know, there's, again, in our day and age especially, there's a lot of anti-Christian polemic and anti-Bible, anti-Christian material on the internet that essentially reaches those people first. And so they're essentially poisoned wells. And so you combine that with, again, this sense that there must be something bigger than me out there. And so this becomes a very workable alternative just because of what they either neutrally don't believe or what they actively want to reject or feel they need to reject.
Yeah.
You know, like, for instance, some people will refuse Christianity because of young earth creationism. you know, that they feel like you're only giving me, you're giving me an either or choice here. Either I have to believe in the young earth view, or I have to jettison, you know, faith in God or Christ or whatever. And so they'll jettison it because they don't believe the other, you know. So people get put into these situations, and I think unfortunately so, where they make decisions like that. But some are more aggressively negative, obviously. On the positive side, I've met a number of Christians, and I've said before on shows, if I had, you know, a $5 bill for every Christian, either on the radio or a UFO conference, that walked up to me and said, I used to be a Christian until, and then they would fill in the blank with, I had some experience, or someone I know and trust and love had an experience, or this thing I saw on YouTube, or something I saw on the History Channel, or this book I read by Zechariah Sitchin, or whatever it is. For Christians, when they are exposed to that, it puts them at a crisis point. Mm-hmm. They have one of two decisions they can make. They either jettison their faith, they're no longer going to be a Christian, or they say, I want to retain my faith, but now I have to factor all this material, all this other stuff, this other thinking into my Christianity to keep it. And so they come up with the most bizarre Bible interpretations that, you know, really imaginable, but it helps them cope with what they feel is this internal crisis. And they, you know, I really try hard not to rain on that parade, because even though I think, you know what, your view, the Tower of Babel really wasn't a teleportation device, and you don't have a prayer of being correct here, but if it keeps you in the faith, I'm going to try to not destroy that for you.
Sure.
You know, it's just this tightrope walk, especially for somebody like me, you know, because sometimes I'll get asked in Q&As and all that kind of stuff. But I've met a lot of people like that they're interpreting the Bible the way they are, not because they're weirdos or because they're just, you know, loose cannons or something. They're doing it because they're trying to keep their faith. They're trying to process the Bible in light of this other stuff so that they can stay in the faith. And so they become UFO alien believers. Mm-hmm. Alongside or in conjunction with their faith. This is how they do it. This is how they process it.
Right. Interesting.
So I think it's so great to hear your perspective, because it's a lot different from like some of our other guests, which are hardcore believers in aliens. It's mm-hmm. nice to also hear a perspective of someone that doesn't necessarily discount them, just kind of hasn't been convinced of necessarily what most people say is what's happening with aliens, like that.
I'll just be honest with you. You know, I do the same thing at conferences. It's like, look, here's where I'm at, and I'll be nice to you. I'll say, here's what I need from you, for you to win this argument, for me to come over to your side. Here's what I need. You know, and I might know that, you know, there's really no way that you're going to be able to produce this, but there are a few things on that list, like I'm willing to think that science could in some way, you know, validate this. I mean, let's say that we had a manned mission to Mars, and, you know, I know that the conspiratorial culture, you know, we live in would, you know, this is still not going to be, you know, valid for a lot of people. But let's say that we took a manned mission to Mars, and, you know, they all took cameras, and it's recorded from the very moment they get there, and lo and behold, there are structures there. Well, you know, hey, that's a good argument for an alien life form, an intelligent one. You know, of course, you're always going to have people say, well, NASA went there earlier and built those things. It's a movie set, or, you know, I understand that. But I mean, I'm at least willing to try to lay out some things that if you could produce this evidence, it would, you know, be a fairly compelling, you know, thing.
Right.
And it would get this on the table for me. So I don't want to just say, oh, I don't, you know, agree with this or that idea. I try to tell people, here's what you need, you know, for me, if you really want me to think about this and come over to your side, this is what I need from you. So the problem is essentially yours if you want to convince me, if that's why you're here. If you're just here to, you know, yell at the church or something like that, well, then you're not, you know, you're not in information mode. You know, you're just a talking seal or something, or a clapping seal. I tend to look at those kind of people differently. But most of the people at these sorts of events are there for better reasons than that.
Sure.
Right. And I think something that I've seen in a lot of debates, the most pointless debate you can have is when, if you get down to it, if you asked either person in the debate, what would convince you to go to the other side? Neither of them have anything that would actually do that. Like, for instance, an atheist talking to a Christian, the Christian says, well, what if God came down to you and said he was real? And then the atheist says, well, I don't think I was hallucinating. And then the atheist says, well, what would you do if you found out, you know, like that evolution was true in every way and all these things? And they said, well, then I would just think that that was just God an illusion.
Doing it, yeah.
Yeah, and so and for both of them, they're so set in what they believe that there's no room to budge. So there's value in at least having some kind of line that can be crossed that will at least convince you otherwise. Yeah. What's the point?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, and if somebody would produce this, I'm not saying I would not think critically about it, but it's like, okay, that's what I asked for, and I'm going to probe it a little bit, and if it turns out to be genuine, well, then it's real, you know, and I'm okay with it being real.
Right.
Yeah.
I would like to feel that I'm making a good decision. That when right. I say I'm embracing this idea, that I'm embracing something that is true and really has validity, as opposed to just embracing something I want, you know, to be true.
Great.
That's good.
I think that's it, Dave. You want to wrap us up here?
Yeah, well, actually, I was going to say, what's the best way that people could find out more about you like your work?
Books and whatnot.
The Nerve Center for everything I do is my homepage, which is drmsh.com. So DR as in doctor, and then my initials, MSH, a very creative website there.
That's great.
drmsh.com. It's hard to misspell.
Yeah, how if you were to say that, how would you say that? Dermish?
Dermish or something.
It's no starry time, yeah. But, you know, in
order. I used to use my full name and people couldn't spell it. You know, they'd get the E before the I and an I before E and all that. So that's where you go.
Grammar.
It has links to all my blogs, different websites that I maintain, of course, books. My podcast, you know, so for this topic, I would recommend, you know, people read my novels. But what makes the novels different, and you'll see it on the front cover, and it's not just marketing shtick. I really mean it. Mm-hmm. Everything in this book is real, okay? In every text, every government document, everything is real, and that's true. The fiction is how I connect those data points and the story that I erect on top of them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I kind of like that approach that I will give you breadcrumb trails on real things, but then I'll put it together in a fictional narrative. So people learn a lot, you know, through them, and hopefully they're entertained, and people can go up to Amazon and read reviews and whatnot. So
yeah,
but that's where you go, drmsh.com. My Twitter handle's up there, and you know, you can subscribe to the feeds too.
Cool. And did you just recently start a cinematic theology podcast or something like that?
Yeah, we have. We've actually done – I've only posted one episode. We've actually done a second one.
Okay.
And the guy that I was doing that with has sort of dropped off the radar. So I don't know what I'm going to do with it yet. And I probably – boy, should I mention this or not?
Yeah, go for it. Give us something.
Yep. Make our podcast good.
I am considering doing a podcast. I'm considering doing a podcast on paranormal stuff, but with a twist. And here's the twist.
Okay.
We only discuss peer-reviewed material. So I would call it paranormal.
Oh, I see what you did. That's way better than Starry Time.
here's why people don't realize that. What we call, you know, paranormal, whether it's ESP, telekinesis, UFOs, you know, all this kind of stuff, this has actually received a good bit of peer-reviewed attention. I mean, I have hundreds of articles that come from academic journals on this kind of stuff, but it never filters down, you know, to people because you need journal subscriptions and they're expensive and, you know, libraries don't always have them. I mean, if you're near a university, well, then you can get most of it. Because your university or college will subscribe to the main journal databases. But I spend lots of time literally just combing through journals just to collect stuff like this. So it'd be very easy to say, well, this week we're going to talk about, you know, and post it, this article, here it is, or I'll, you know, and the show would consist of, okay, here's this article, here's what this person teaches, here's what they did for research, here was the method, here's what they concluded, here's what they can say, here's what they can't say. And now if any of this is valid, you know, the stuff that, you know, they did discover here or they suspect is real, does that have any implications for how we view the world, you know, or as Christians for how we think Christianly about right. this? And it would be real simple, but it would be kind of unique. I don't know that it would be – I hope it would be interesting, because I think people would be interested in knowing that, hey, they actually did do this. Somebody actually did do this. Some real right. scientist actually tackled this. And here's what they found. Here's what they didn't find. And here's the next thing that they're going to work on. You know, something like that. So I'm tinkering with the idea.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah. Not that I need another podcast to listen to, but I would listen to it.
I would absolutely listen to it.
Well, there
that's
you go.
Great.
So now you're the first guys that know I'm thinking about that. So
just
I'm going to hold you to it. Then your accountability partners is this podcast.
we're really, I think you really are going to put us on the map with that announcement for sure. For sure.
that's what we're going to title this one.
Thanks for taking my musing and making it an announcement.
Absolutely. That's what we're here for. We're here to basically use you to put us on the map. So thanks for joining us. We appreciate it.
Michael Schreiser announced new podcast on the Starry Time.
All right, Dr. Scholar Mike, I'm so thankful that you came on today to talk about all this just crazy, awesome, interesting stuff out of your busy schedule. So thank you very much. We appreciate it.
Yep, thanks for the invitation.
And big thanks to Dr. Michael Heiser for joining us on the Starry Time podcast. Dave, thoughts, concerns, feelings? Do you have the feels?
I think we were both a little bit, we weren't expecting him to be so similar to what we think on things.
Go ahead.
I was thinking that he was totally on board with the alien thing, and he was kind of approaching it from the spiritual aspect. But instead, he was talking about how those things actually aren't the same.
Yeah,
which was kind of cool. And also, I think we need to read more, because we would have known that.
No, I don't think so. I think we read his bio, and he won an award for a UFOlogy thing. Like, I feel like that goes to someone who believes, you know. Mm-hmm. Anyways, it doesn't. Michael Heiser, very thankful that he joined us, because obviously far brighter than we are. But I enjoyed it thoroughly. It was truly fascinating for me to listen to him. I just loved it. I loved every second of it.
I did as well. And I think he's got a pretty amazing idea for a podcast. Kind of want to steal it.
Well, I mean, I think we could. We could just people are already pissed off enough about the name of the podcast. We could just go ahead and steal his.
It's about paranormal, but then they're always
It's Paracast, or
no, it's a pun, and it's like peer, all the cases peer and normal, because it's peer reviewed.
I do want to share this email, Dave. We got this week about our name.
Mm-hmm. Is this going to be a new portion of the podcast? Is the name, how it's doing?
I think so. It's not going so well. Working on getting an interview with this lady. She's very nice, very kind. Emailed her, and I simply explained, you know, we're the Starry Time podcast, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. She emails me back, and she says, I once wrote a Star Trek zine called Starry Night and struggle with the spelling of starry.
Everyone struggles with it.
But if it is starry, I think it has to be two R's, but not sure. So she's as confused as we are, so I'm appreciative of that. So I think it was almost her saying, hey, are you so sure about this?
And that's the kindest way you can do it, via email. Because if she had just said, like what most people say, hey, it's this way, then we would have read into that and added our own tone to what she was saying, and probably would have made her out to be a monster, so, which she's not, and she was very careful to,
very,
to point out.
Very nice. And I emailed her back, and I said, Starry does indeed have two R's, though R's is pronounced the same way. We did it so it would look similar to Story. It's a lot to explain. So, yeah, if you guys are confused, Starry, spelled with two R's, we spell it with one, pronounced the same way. Very simple.
What it really – and if we ever were to do something, just try and fix it, we would put a hyphen between – Starry in time, so that it looks, or just get rid of the space completely and make it, because really Story time would be together, you know, and we, so that's why people are confused. It's because the thing, the pun we were trying to make, we also didn't even spell that right to make that pun. And so every week we're going to update you on how much it doesn't make sense.
I mean, I hear we've heard a little bit of feedback of what people think about the show. But primarily, it's about why. Why did you make the mistake?
Think about this, though, Graham. That's how, would you think that Obama would have been president if people weren't so hung up on wanting to get that birth certificate? Sometimes it's those little things that kind of get you where you need to be where you need to be.
That's an excellent comparison, Dave. I appreciate that.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Dave, next week we're really excited. We got the guys from Bigfoot's Pad on here.
And that's pad as in, like, check out my pad, bro.
Yeah, as in, like, the crib, the house. So we're like excited about that.
It's going to be on the Paranormal MTV, if you know what I mean, Brand. Nudge with the elbow.
All right. So we're excited about this. It's the first interview we ever did with two people. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's
fun.
And
upon their request, not even our own.
Yeah, they were like, hey, we love the Star Time so much. If I could bring on a friend... And we said, hey, who are we to say no?
I think they also said, do you have the technology to handle this? And we said, do you have the technology?
Yeah, I mean, clearly,
right back at them.
Clearly the quality of the Star at Time is above all the rest.
And it's in the hands of the interviewees.
Just below This American Life.
Mm.
I'd say.
What would it be like? Okay, could you give me a scale so I can see where we fall on that?
Sure.
Like, let's say that it's only an inch scale and we're just below. Like, it doesn't make a difference, but how long is the scale? Give me a couple other podcasts as reference.
Okay. We'll go with This American Life. Wait, Don't Tell Me. The Starry Time Podcast.
Yep.
Dark Matter.
Obviously, I would almost put that on equal with ours.
Is that the name of the show? I'm sorry, Midnight in the Desert. I'm so sorry. Yeah. That's the name of his show now. I'm so sorry. The podcast called Yes. I just made mm-hmm. that one up.
Yeah. And then what's at the bottom?
The bottom is this one, probably. But
so the different parts of this one have like different ratings?
Yeah.
So maybe like our interviews are the second place, and then the parts where we're just talking is number like the bottom.
No, I don't expect anyone to make it this far.
Right.
So,
Brand, we should start telling like secrets, but this far in.
All right.
And see, if, like, or like, say where to find money.
Occasionally, I pick my nose and eat it.
You pick your nose and eat the nose.
the boogers occasionally.
Okay. My turn. Dang it. Okay. Wow. You were like ready to go for this?
Well, I'm ready to, I'm an open book.
Mm-hmm. No, I mean, like, I'm starting to think. Okay. I sometimes will, pee in the shower.
Oh, everyone does that.
I know, but everybody eats their nose too.
Hey, Dave, did you know that if people wanted to email us, they can do that at at StarryTimePodcast1r@gmail.com. That's what they can do.
Can't wait for us to get emails. No, everyone does not pee in the shower. And may I remind you that Starry Time is 2 hours.
Yeah, no, trust me, we know. Hey, Dave, thanks so much for hanging out with me, man.
Some would say that we took out the R and we put in the P. All right. See you later, Brian.
From Greenville, South Carolina.
David, from that Brooklyn.
This is the Starry Time Podcast.
Good night. What's his name again? Mike Meisner.
Dr. Michael Heiser.